Hello and welcome back to Shockingly Wicked, a true crime podcast where we bring you true crime cases from the headlines to the hometowns. I'm Brianna.
I'm Brittany.
And we are your hosts for the evening.
No, we're not.
So, yeah, okay. Well, bye everyone. So, we've been gone a very long time. And in that time, we have developed a couple new hyperfixations. Brits, in particular, started after the Titanic submersible, or the Titan submersible implosion happened. She started looking into, you know, shipwrecks, specifically the Titanic, and then also just other submersible disasters, I guess. So.
And ships.
So
this season is gonna be a lot of ships and submersibles, but I'll sprinkle in a little death, a little murder, a little homicide here and there.
Yes, and I'm really excited about some of the historical sides of it, because we know that I really enjoy historical cases. I haven't quite figured out my entire lineup for this season yet, but we'll find out together. So, Britt, what are we talking about today?
Last season, it was celebrities, I think, for me.
Yes, last season was celebrities, because you did a bonus episode on Martha Stewart, and then you did the Snoop Dogg episode, and...
then it just kind of spiraled. I feel like there was... I think I did 50 Cent.
And then you talked about doing 50 Cent. I don't know if we ever actually recorded that one, though.
I know I did Tupac and Biggie, but I don't know if it got recorded.
We did not record that one either. I know that one was also on the list. And then you did Chris Benoit, but I think that might have been season two, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't remember. It's been so long.
It's a public service.
Yes, that one was, you were bullied into it, but I mean, it's only fair because you are the bully of all bullies.
The bullies are scared of me.
All right. Tell us what today's case is.
Today's case is the USS Thresher and the sinking of it.
Excellent. So, I don't think we have anything to really say, so I'm just going to let you take it away.
Okay. So, the Thresher was launched on July 9th in 1960. It's fucking old as piss.
It's not that old. My dad is born in 1959.
Oh, don't say that. That's very old.
No. Sorry, Dad.
Sorry. From Portsmouth Naval Yard in New Hampshire.
I think it's Portsmouth. I think that's how it's pronounced. I know it's weird. It's spelled Portsmouth, but I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Portsmouth.
I was like, what?
No, I know that's how it's spelled, but I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Portsmouth. It's kind of like here in Virginia, where we have a bunch of cities or town names, and they don't pronounce them the way that they're spelled. Like,
speaking
there's
of,
Stanton, Virginia, which is spelled Staunton, and I'm like, that's not correct.
I forgot to tell you, I had somebody come tour the other day, and they were like, yeah, we're from Lynchburg, and I'm like, wow, crazy. They're like, yeah, we graduated from Liberty. I was like, wow, even crazier. Do you know Brianna? They're like, no. I'm like,
no.
I can't tell you their names. They probably their names.
I mean, that's
I was
fine,
like, well, her
really
dad
doubt.
Was this, and then her mom was this, and they're like, oh, yeah, we don't know. And I'm like, and I know all the fucking tea there. I know which professors be sleeping with who.
I know, like, I still know the tea, even though my dad doesn't work there anymore. Oh, that's another thing that happened. He's working somewhere
else
now.
He got a new job. Okay, so, in New Hampshire. Built with new technology, it was the first submarine assembled as part of a new class that could run more quietly and dive deeper than any that had come before. The Thresher got underway on the initial sea trials of Portsmouth Naval Yard in Kittery, Maine on April 30th, 1961. Fucking Kittery, Maine. All right.
Kittery.
She was
I just imagine the entire town being full of cats.
She was the first of a new class of nuclear powered submarines, combining the attributes of an attack submarine and specialized in hunter killer craft. Fucking sounds like
hunter-killer.
It sounds like when you do dressage, like when you're horseback riding, it's called hunter jumper.
Yeah.
Because I used to do that.
Interesting.
I feel like, meow.
I feel like I just unlocked new lore. What? You used to do dressage?
Yeah. You didn't know?
No, I didn't know you rode horses.
Yeah.
This is brand new information to me.
Wow. Yeah, I did it for like 12 years.
Wow. You are Florida. A horse girl. I love it.
I'm top notch. That's why I'm a bully.
I love it.
The submarine had a cigar-shaped hole, and that was, you know, I just, in the last month, I've heard hole so many times watching the Titanic.
I want to specify, she's saying hull, but because of her accent, it sounds like hole.
It's hole.
Because I thought you meant hole until I looked at your notes, and I was like, oh, okay, I can't make my dirty joke now. Because when you said cigar-shaped hole, I was like, are we sure that's what it was shaped like?
That was derived from the research submarine Albacore AGSS-569 for efficient underwater performance. In her bow was the massive BQQ-2 sonar barbecue, heralded as the most advanced sonar ever fitted to a submarine, being credited with unprecedented passive detection ranges. A little facts for you.
Thanks.
Could not tell you anything else about a submarine. The sonar dome.
You're just real country today, huh?
I heard it. I heard that one. That the sonar dome. All right. Well, y'all know what it is. Was 15 feet in diameter, mounting to 1,241 transistors. Sonar dome.
Are you good? No. I'm sorry. I keep laughing.
I heard it. The Thresher's,
I'll mute myself.
The Thresher's four torpedo tubes were aft of the sonar, two on each side, angled out at 10 degrees from the center line. I know what the fuck I'm talking about. I don't know why I'm reading it like I don't, but I know what I'm talking about.
Do you, though?
Yeah. I spent like 3 nights on this.
Are you just pretending?
They could fire the latest anti-ship and anti-submarine torpedoes. I had that type. Later, she was fitted to fire the ASROC anti-submarine rocket from those tubes. The ASROC was a combination rocket and torpedo. Launched like a conventional torpedo, it would strike the surface, leave the water on a ballistic trajectory, and then plunge back into the water several miles from the Thresher, where the sub-rock's nuclear warhead would detonate.
Dang.
The sub-rock's W55 nuclear warhead was a variable yield of 1 to 5 kilotons. The weapon was in the U.S. arsenal from 1965 to 1988. Just a little fact for you.
Interesting.
The submarine's S-5W reactor plant would give her unlimited range. Her pressure hull constructed of HY-80 steel and would enable her to dive to some 1,300 feet, unprecedented for a U.S. submarine at the time.
I mean, I feel like that's pretty deep, but I'm having a hard time, like, envisioning how deep that is.
Well, the Titanic's 12,000 feet, so...
Oh, okay.
It's not that.
So, like, allegedly, to that. It can... Yeah. Okay.
Her initial sea trials with Vice Admiral Jimon G. Rickover, head of the Navy's nuclear propulsion program, on board was successful, although there were some issues with instrumentation. The Thresher was placed in commission
what
of
kind
the-
of issues?
We'll get there.
That's never a good sign.
The Thresher was placed in commission at the Portsmouth Yard on August 3rd, 1961, with Commander Dean L. Aixon in command. At her commissioning ceremonies, Vice Admiral Harold T. Duderman, the principal speaker, declared, quote, Thresher is not just another ship. Thresher is totally different, end quote. That's what they said about the Titanic.
That's where you fucked up. That's where you fucked up. That's foreshadowing.
I need them to stop jinxing these ships. That's like the third time. They said that about the Titanic. They said it about the Thresher. They said it about the Titan. Stop yep. talking about the ship.
Stop. This is called hubris. That's exactly what that is. You know, you start talking a big game, and then the universe is like, hey, how about Psych. Fuck you?
Psych! Less than 2 years later, the Thresher would lay shattered on the ocean floor with the loss of all 129 men on board. Following her commissioning, the Thresher continued a lengthy series of trials and tests, as well as exercises off the Atlantic coast, sailing as far as south as Puerto Rico. While in port in San Juan, the crew encountered problems with her diesel generator and then had difficulty in restarting her nuclear reactor. Shock tests followed with the Thresher subjected to a greater intentional pounding than any other submarine in the Navy history.
Sorry. Continue.
He stood up remarkably well with Commander Axon stating, quote, "There was no question that the Thresher suffered damage, but it was all relatively minor. The damage we sustained did not impair the ship's ability to operate, and much of it, such as damage to vital sonar tubes, we could repair ourselves with our store of spare parts," end quote. More tests and trials followed. In mid-July 1962, the Thresher returned to the Portsmouth Yard. There she embarked the crew's wives, parents, and children for a, quote, happy cruise. Then the submarine was back in the shipyard for a major maintenance work. It's just when they didn't go below the surface that far. I think they went like 6 feet around, but it was around the the thing.
That's not that bad, but I'm like, I feel like that's testing fate. You could have wiped out these entire families, you know, what is it? Family trees.
Yeah, lineage.
Yeah, that's the word. Thank you. Yes, lineage.
Axon said, quote, "Relations between Thresher and Portsmouth are always extraordinarily good, at least in my experience," end quote. But then he quickly added, quote, "It's true that we felt they should have been more efficient and should have done better work at times and move more quickly, and they should have done a better job of cleaning up after themselves. I was told by others that relations did deteriorate towards the end of the post-shakedown availability," end quote. While the Thresher was in the shipyard, Commander Axon received orders to take command of a new construction Polaris ballistic missile submarine, the USS John C. Calhoun, or the SSBN-630. I need them to fucking name these subs better names. He protested the orders, wanting to see the yard's work completed. His request was denied. Axon's relief in January 1963 with Lieutenant Commander John Wesley Harvey at age 36. West Harvey had studied for a year on a scholarship at the University of Pennsylvania before entering the U.S. Naval Academy. After graduation, he served in an aircraft carrier and then in a diesel-electric submarine. He applied for nuclear power training, after which he reported aboard the Pioneer Nuclear Submarine Nautilus SSN-571 as reactor control officer. He was on board the Nautilus and then became the first ship in history to reach the North Pole. Which is a lie, because I'm pretty sure Santa has a fucking boat.
Does he?
Yeah, he might.
Does he have a yacht?
He might. He's Santa. Santa's not rich.
Santa.
He's not rich. He got little elves.
He has. He yes, all that slave labor.
They're not slaves. They do it because they're happy.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Have we ever asked the elves?
We don't need to. Harvey had come into the limelight in 1958 when television producers were seeking personable young heroes for quiz shows. Okay. Ooh. John Glenn was a contestant in his pre-astronaut days when he had just set a new transcontinental air speed record. Harvey, the lieutenant just back from Nautilus Epic Cruise, was asked to try out for the NBC game show Concentration. Damn, they had NBC game shows back in 58. That's crazy.
Yes. Yes, they did.
He managed to solve the rebus puzzle ahead of his competitors, often enough to win a car, a set of electric trains, a motion picture projector, two tickets to the coveted Broadway show My Fair Lady, a mink stole, a Swedish-made motorbike, an electric can opener, and a mud bath. He was most were welcomed by Harvey's wife, Irene, and their two sons, then aged 4 and 7. I know Irene was like, there goes Harvey. Because she getting that mink stole. That's what she getting. Harvey Starr was on the rise after serving as chief engineer for a land-based submarine reactor at Windsor, Connecticut. He became engineer officer of the hunter-killer submarine Tulaby SSN-597 in May 1961 as lieutenant commander. He became executive officer of the Sea Dragon. That's what I'm talking about. The Sea Dragon.
I like that.
Period.
Sea Dragon is a lot better.
Yeah, the SSN-584, the submarine undertook innovative under ice Arctic operations. Thus, he came to the Thresher well-trained and with considerable experience. I mean, Thresher's really not that bad of a name. But fucking the John C. Calhoun. Why he gotta have a whole ass name? Just name him something cool.
I would prefer it if it was Thrasher, though. That would be cooler.
Like, imagine you're, like, just, you just get taken out by USS John C. Calhoun and not the USS Sea Dragon. I would kill myself anyways.
I would, like, be, that's very so embarrassing. To return home.
Yeah. Slowly, the Thrasher began to look like a fighting ship again as her yard period at Portsmouth ended, neared an end. When the submarine opened panels were closing, piping was connected and tested, dials and pointers checked, and the mass of trash and debris that had accumulated during her extensive work was removed. The submarine underwent a fast cruise, which moored to a pier. She was sealed and all equipment then that could be tested. Even the Thrasher's propeller was tested while cables had the submarine fast to the pier. More tests were conducted, as well as emergency drills. At last, navigation instruments, food, ashtrays, and some personal belongings, mattresses, and bedding were brought aboard on the submarine, was prepared for a post-overhaul sea trial. At, how do you say it in military time? I know it's 3 o'clock, but
3:45. I don't
know. 3:45 on April 9th, 1963, the Thrasher's engineers began the 4-hour countdown required for starting up the submarine's reactor plant. At 7:30, the engine room reported that full power was available. Lines were cast off and the Thrasher was underway. On board were 129 men, 12 officers, 96 enlisted men of the submarine's crew, a submarine force staff officer, 3 officers, and 13 civilian employees of the Portsmouth Yard, a specialist from the Naval Ordnance Laboratory, and 3 civilian factory representatives. 4 Thrasher crew members had remained ashore for various reasons. The submarine steamed south from the yard and into the open sea of the Odorianus Point. I don't know, honey. At 09:49 east of Boston, she rendezvoused with submarine rescue ship USS Skylark ASR-20, which would accompany the submarine on her trials. The 205-foot Skylark carried divers and specialized equipment to enable her to moor over stricken submarine and rescue personnel with her cable-lowered rescue chamber. So she was basically like a rescue boat.
A failsafe.
Yeah. Developed in the late 1920s, the rescue chamber had used operationally only once in 1939 to rescue 33 men from the stricken submarine USS Squalus. SS-192. Another 26 crewmen lost their lives in that tragedy. The Squalus had sunk in 240 feet of water. The rescue chamber had rated depth capability of 850 feet. What the fuck am I stammering? Although the Skylark was to accompany the Thrasher, the rescue ship's commanding officer had no information as to the capabilities of the submarine, such as her depth and speed. So it can only go up to 850 feet, but the submarine can sink to, like, can go reach 1,300 feet. So that's really not working out well for them.
That's really unfortunate.
An underwater telephone designed UQC was the means of communication with the submerged submarine. The Thrasher made a shallow dive to test equipment and communicated with the Skylark via UQC. Back on the surface, the afternoon of April 9th, Commander Harvey directed the Skylark to rendezvous with the submarine some 200 miles east of Cape Cod for the Thrasher's deepwater test. At about 1500, which is 3 o'clock, the Thrasher again slipped beneath the waves and sped towards the deeper water. At around 6:35 on April 10th, the Thrasher came up to periscope depth some 10 miles from the Skylark. Just over 1 hour later, Harvey advised the Skylark that he was taking the Thrasher to test depth, her maximum operating depth, generally reported 1,300 feet. Before her recent yard period, the Thrasher had been to her test depth some 40 times. So she had made it before. At around 7:47,
just not since they had actually done the renovations or whatever it was they were doing.
Yeah, so around 7:47, the Thrasher reported to the Skylark by the UQC underwater telephone that she was beginning the test depth dive. 5 minutes later, Harvey reported being at 400 feet and checking for leaks. At 7:54, the Thrasher told the rescue ship that the future reference to depth would be made in terms of test depth. At 8:09, the Thrasher reported that she was at least one half test. At 8:35, the Thresher communicated minus 300 feet. At 9:02, the Thresher asked for a repetition of course reading. At 9:12, the two ships made a routine check. The Skylark's handwritten log, the official record, recorded that at 9:12, a satisfactory underwater telephone check was made. Then the Thresher reported, quote, half position up angle, attempting to blow up, end quote. The exact time of the final message was not recorded. Some of the Skylark's crew remembered the message differently, quote, experiencing minor problem, having positive angle, attempting to blow, end quote, and, quote, experiencing minor difficulty, have positive up angle, attempting to blow, will keep you informed, end quote. At 9:14, the Skylark.
I feel like those are very different messages.
I think they all say pretty much the same thing, but they're, like, missing some, which that could be, like, the test, like, it was coming in and not everybody was hearing it.
Yeah.
Because they're, because this is a relatively new, like, the underwater telephone is, like, a relatively new thing. And the Thresher is the only submarine that has been able to ever reach, like, that depth. So it could be, like, where they're coming through. At 9:14, the Skylark requested that the Thresher give her course and bearing. There was no reply. Then the Skylark asked, quote, are you in control, end quote. There was no reply. The question was asked again several times. Nothing more was heard from the submarine until 9:17, when there was a garbled message that ended with the distinct words, quote, test depths, end quote. Seconds later, the Skylark's commanding officer, Lieutenant Commander Stanley W. Hecker, heard what sounded like a ship breaking up, like a compartment collapsing. So basically, it sounded like it imploded. Subsequently, the Skylark began dropping grenades, the prearranged signal for a submarine to surface if UQC communication failed. The Skylark advised shore commands of the situation, and soon massive air and surface forces were searching for the missing undersea craft. The Thresher was gone in waters some 8,400 feet deep, so it imploded and then sunk to the bottom.
Way too far down for them to actually do anything about it.
16 officers, 96 sailors, and 17 civilians were on board. All were killed. And at this time, the Titanic had still not been found. So the Titanic was found in 1985, I think. So, and this is like 1958.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
On April 12th, President John F. Kennedy ordered flags across the country be flown at half staff to commemorate the lives lost in the disaster. At about 1900 on April 10th, the Navy began notifying the families of the men on board of the Thresher that the submarine was overdue and presumed missing. There was no use of the term sunk or lost, as optimists hoped that the submarine was intact and suffering a communication failure. That hope quickly faded. So they were thinking, like, maybe it, like, went up. Like, kind of like how they thought with the Titan, that it went up and was just floating somewhere. A massive search began for the remains of the Thresher. In time, some floating debris from the submarine was recovered. So actually some of the
debris floated back up to the surface. Yeah.
An automobile and then a discarded diesel-electric submarine, the Toro, which is also kind of a cool name, the SS-422. Think of
Toro,
Bring It On.
Makes me think of,
I actually haven't seen that one, but I've seen all the other ones.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who are you?
Brittany.
I can't believe I'm friends with you.
My favorite one's
the uncultured swine.
My favorite one's the one with Hayden Panettiere. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I'm judging you. Yes, I know which one you're talking about, and I'm judging you.
I only like it because her name's Brittany.
Of course. Narcissist.
Okay, so an automobile and then a discarded diesel electric submarine, the Toro SS-422, were sunk in the area to determine how local currents would affect a sinking object. Soon ships searched the ocean floor with sonar and deep towed sleds with cameras, magnetometers, and Geiger counters.
Geiger counters.
Some debris were detected and small pieces were recovered. Next, the Bathyscaphe Treste II was brought to the area. She was the only U.S. craft that could reach the 8,400 foot depths of the Thresher's remains. I don't think you could be in it. I could be wrong, but I don't think you could be in it.
Yeah.
On June 27th, she located the main Thresher's debris field. The Treste II was able to recover a twisted pipe of with the markings 593 boat. The Bathscath returned to the dive on the debris field in 1964, 1967, 1977, and 1979. On June 6, 1963, the Navy's Court of Inquiry into the loss of the Threshers completed its work after almost 2 months of hearings. The court recorded 1,700 pages of testimony from 120 witnesses and collected some 225 charts, drawings, letter, photographs, and other exhibits related to the disaster. The first two paragraphs of the court's subsequent public statement presented the official Navy opinion of what killed the Thresher.
I know, I know. We won't keep you sitting on the edge of your seat too long. We will get right back to that after a quick word about our sponsors.
A flooding casualty in the engine room is believed to be the most probable cause of the sinking of the nuclear submarine SS Thresher, lost on April 10th, 1963, 220 miles east of Cape Cod, with 129 persons aboard. Which is crazy, because isn't it like 400, like around 400 miles of is from Cape Cod is where Titanic is?
I think so. Something like that.
Honestly, we should just stay out of the coast of Cape Cod.
Yeah, well, I would say maybe just don't claim that your ship is, you know, unsinkable or is different than all the rest. Like just,
obviously that area is like,
let the ship or the actions speak for themselves, you know?
Did you see where Ocean Gate is still advertising trips that they're going to take in 2024? And the first person listed is Paul Henry Negligé as somebody who could be aboard the ship. I'm like, they haven't even updated the website. But you're advertising 2024 trips? Please.
Yeah, you should probably fix that, considering, you know, your company murdered the man, but...
Literally. Okay, so the Navy believes it's most likely that the piping system failure had occurred in one of the Thresher saltwater systems, probably in the engine room. The enormous pressure of seawater surrounding the submarine subjected her interior to a violent spray of water and progressive flooding. Probably water affected critical electrical circuits and caused loss of power. Thresher slowed and began to sink. Within a moment, she had exceeded her collapse death and totally flooded. She came to rest on the ocean floor 8,400 feet beneath the surface. Which at some point she would have imploded.
Yeah.
But midway in the statement was a qualifier, quote, the record states that it is impossible with the information now available to obtain a more precise determination of what actually happened, end quote. So they can't tell you for sure, but I'm pretty sure she imploded. If there's a leak, she imploded somewhere.
Yeah.
Still, an analysis of the last messages from the Thresher, coupled with the later analysis of acoustic readings by the Navy Seafloor Sound Surveillance System, SOSUS. Sepsis, indicated that a piping failure was not what caused her loss. Rather, it appears at 9:12 on April 10th that the Thresher was at 1,100 to 1,200 feet, approaching her test depth in what so far had been a normal, safe, and seemingly routine dive. Then came the message experiencing minor problems at the depth of 1,000 feet. Approximately 100,000 pounds of seawater would flood through a 6-inch pipe in just 1 minute. Even flooding through a half-inch pipe hardly would be considered minor at the noise and the powerful spray that would cause confusion within the submarine. Commander Axine, the Thresher's first commanding officer, believed that even a half-inch pipe failure at those depths would not be described as minor. So the breaching of a pipe between 2 and 5 inches in diameter would have led to water rushing into the submarine with a velocity of about 1,800 miles per hour at a depth of 1,300 feet. So, like,
it gets real fast.
Had there been major flooding at test depth, it would have generated extreme noise levels that would have prevented effective UQC communications with the Skylark, which could be why they were hearing so many different messages.
Yeah.
No such interference was...
Sorry, I read ahead and I'm like, I like how they say no such interference was evident. It's like, you've got people saying like 4 different messages here, so maybe there's a little interference.
Yeah, no such interference was evident during those communications. Further, the noise generated by such flooding would have been detected by SOSUS, S-O-S-U-S. It was not detected. Experiencing minor problems indicate that no sudden catastrophic event befell the Thresher. For 4 minutes, as the Thresher was attempting to blow up by emptying her ballast tanks with compressed air, there was no communication. Then at 9:17, the submarine transmitted a message ending with test depth. It generally was supposed that exceeding was one of the words preceding test depth. The U.S. Navy constructs submarines to withstand 1.5 times the pressure of their design test depth. That is a safety factor. The collapse depth is based on both mathematical calculations and model tests. It thus seemed reasonable to assume that the collapse depth of the Thresher was approximately 1,950 feet. The sequence of casualties suffered by the Thresher apparently caused a fateful depth to increase of 600 feet from test depth to collapse depth in 5 agonizing minutes. As she neared collapse depth, the fitting and pipes would have begun to give way, admitting powerful jets of water that pushed aside men as they struggled to plug them, and this shorted out the electrical system, making corrective actions impossible. The additional weight of the water thus admitted would have driven the Thresher still deeper at an ever-increasing speed. The submarine's hull would have groaned under the increasing pressure, trying to crush her air-filled interior. So, implosion.
Yeah.
Thank you. There probably were no serious personnel casualties to that point, but all in the submarine would have sensed that they were rushing towards disaster and grouped frantically for some means of escape or survival. The insulating cork that lined the submarine's interior would begin to crack and possibly flake off. Pipes would pull apart as the water pressure began to pull the submarine's hardened steel like taffy. The hull would then implode. Ooh. Complete destruction would occur in 1/20 of a second, too fast to be cognitively recognized by the men on the submarine. So they wouldn't have, like, they would have panicked, but they wouldn't have known what happened.
Yeah. Which I guess is a blessing.
I guess, but you have to, like, all the way up until that point, you're panicking. So,
is there? Oh, really, I know. Blessing? I mean, I would never, like, know. I would never go
into a submarine.
I would never get into a submarine, so I would never experience whatever this feeling is. Danger? Don't know her.
Millions of pounds of water under tremendous pressure would smash the submarine's hull, breaking it open, twisting portions, disintegrating other parts. The theory that water filled the plummeting Thresher before she could implode is generally discounted because the additional weight of the water would have accelerated the downward rate and caused an implosion before the hull could fill with water. What was the minor difficulty that the Thresher encountered at about 9:13 that led them to the worst submarine disaster in history, though?
I'm wondering.
The problem was called minor, the Thresher's commanding officer soon emitted the blow in his main ballast tanks to reach the surface. Thus, it appears the minor difficulty probably was one that caused the submarine to become heavy. That most likely would occur because of losing propulsion or taking the on water. As noted above, taking on water could have led to the loss of propulsion. More probable is the loss of propulsion with the initial difficulty. With the resulting loss of forward motion, the Thresher began to sink deeper because of her heavy water ballast. An effort to expel ballast would have been difficult because of the increasing external water pressure. Before the downward motion of the submarine could be halted, she exceeded her collapse depth with the subsequent failure of pipes and fitting admitting water, driving her still deeper until the hull imploded.
I know it's a blessing that it happens quickly, but it's like, that's not a way I would want to go.
Mm-mm. Because you know what's going on. You know what's happening. Mm-hmm. It would be different, I guess, if, like, you absolutely had no idea, you thought everything was fine, and then you're, boom, gone. That'd be different.
Yeah.
Multiple lines of evidence confirm that the Thresher did not experience major flooding before the collapse of her pressure hull at the depth of 2,400 feet. Most significant, an acoustic analysis of SOSUS recordings confirmed a loss of electrical power and the resulting reactor scram shutdown near test depth 1,300 feet, about 9 minutes before collapse of the pressure hull. And Commander Axon had stated that the message, quote, attempting to blow up, end quote, indicated the propulsion was lost because the submarine should have come up faster by planning up than by blowing ballast. He also could envision that the reactor scram could have described as a, quote, minor problem even at those depths. Thus died the USS Thresher. 6 months later, the Navy announced that all 31 nuclear-powered submarines then under construction in the United States were being delayed. The Navy notated the deficiencies in equipment and workmanship are contributing factors to the delays. Following on, Thresher's class submarines have been lengthened to provide more buoyancy, with the SubSafe program providing additional safety features. Every operational nuclear submarine was restricted to 50% of test steps until subsafe modifications could be made to them. Also, the restarting procedures following a reactor scram were being revised to reduce the startup time. After the Thresher's disaster revealed the Navy's limitation for deep ocean search and rescue in 1964, the Navy established the Deep Submergence Systems Project, DSSP, to develop and manage advanced ocean systems. The effort included plans to construct 6 rescue submersibles that could operate to submarine collapse depths and 2 deep ocean search vehicles that could operate to 20,000 feet, 90% of the ocean's depth, I guess what they thought at that point. The DSSP portfolio eventually included deep sea salvage capabilities, seafloor habitation down to 600 feet, the location and recovery of small objects from the ocean floor, and the nuclear-powered submersible NR-1. Its 2 6,000-foot capability rescue submersibles were built and then later were retired without replacement. The search vehicles were not built. So,
well,
let's talk about the investigation.
Yes, please. I need to know who was incompetent here.
The subsequent investigation of the disaster by the Navy identified a leak in the engine room seawater system as the most probable cause of the tragedy. Further, both Navy investigations and congressional inquiry identified several additional probable causes linked to management, communication, and practices and procedures employed by the Navy and shipyards. So they're blaming both the Navy and the shipyard. These findings suggest several lessons applicable to the Department of Energy. The Thresher was the first of new class of nuclear submarines designed to dive significantly deeper than its predecessors. After nearly a year of record-breaking operations, the submarine underwent a scheduled shipyard overhaul, and then that entailed significant alterations to its hydraulic power plant. Because of fleet operational requirements and competition of the resources with 4 other submarines under construction in the same shipyard, the overhaul was conducted under tight schedule constraints.
So people rushed.
Yeah. The Navy's investigation concluded that while the Thresher was operating at test depth, a leak had developed at a silver brace joint in an engine room seawater system, and a water from the leak may have short-circuited electrical equipment, causing a reactor shutdown and leaving the submarine without primary and secondary propulsion systems. The submarine was unable to blow its main ballast tanks, and because of the boat's weight and depth, the power available from the emergency propulsion motor was insufficient to propel the submarine to the surface. So I think really what it comes down to is that they were operating, or they did everything based on its predecessors when it was built to do more than its predecessors, mm-hmm. but because it was the first of its kind,
they
were like, oh, this will be fine.
Yeah.
But no, it's actually not fine. Sorry, kid.
I guess that's what happens when you're the guinea pig.
Yeah. It deemed the world's worst submarine disaster with 129 lives lost, but investigation around its demise found that its capabilities outstripped the Navy's best practices based on older generation subs. So yeah, that's what it is. It's just the Navy was ill-equipped, I guess. Mm-hmm. For example, the ballast system used to surface in an emergency was a legacy system that was never tested at greater depths and proved to be inadequate. Document showed.
Yes, the document showered.
Woo! There were no problems with silver brace joints and pipes throughout the sub. Retired Captain James Bryant, commander of the Thresher class submarine, agreed that a series of events led to the sinking. The sub descended far too quickly without stopping to assess leaks from previous shock testing months earlier. There were training concerns because the location of valves had changed while in dock, and ice buildup prevented the crew from effectively blowing the ballast tanks to resurface. The main cooling pumps eventually stopped, followed by the nuclear reactor, robbing the submarine of the ability to stop its fatal descent, he said. No one will know for sure how exactly the disaster played out, but it's clear that precious minutes went by as crew became aware of their dire situation. At one point, a message from the submarine to a rescue ship referred to 900 North, suggesting that the sub was 900 feet beyond its test depth, according to documents. The test depth was redacted, but previously declassified documents indicated it was 1,300 feet, said Norman Friedman. He's a naval analyst and the author of more than 30 books on naval topics. The documents reveal many of the submarine's safety systems were based on operations in shallower depth from previous generation submarines and were inadequate in the unlikely scenario of a loss of nuclear propulsion while deep underwater, Bryant said. The World War II mindset during the nuclear age proved fatal for the Thresher crew, he said. At the time, the Navy's resources and personnel were strained as it pushed to get ballistic missile-equipped submarines deployed quickly to counter the Soviet missiles threat. That contributed to a veteran crew members being reassigned and new officers and sailors coming aboard who were less familiar with the Thresher's complicated system of pipes and valves before the fatal dive, he said. Quote, it's almost a wartime situation that you might consider the casualties of the Cold War, end quote, he said, of the in regards to the Thresher crew. Mm-hmm. One submarine has sunk since then, the USS Scorpion, which we will talk about, in 1968. It was not a subsafe certified, the Navy said. Tim Nunes, whose father, a radio operator, perished on the Thresher, said the loss remains painful for families like his, but he finds comfort that the Navy corrected mistakes for the sake of future sailors. So they did correct the mistakes. It just sucks because I don't think it was like somebody in particular who just didn't do correctly. I think, like was said before, this was the first of its kind.
Yeah.
The first that can go this deep, and they were operating under the guise of like before. And I don't know. I didn't really look into it, which I guess I should have. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they realize the deeper you go, the more like how catastrophic that can be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure they did, but, quote, no one wants to lose family members, but if other families have benefited, well, then there's some solace in that, end quote, Nuna said. Meanwhile, Don Wise Jr. of Palestow, New Hampshire, who lost his dad, said that the Thresher crew members were doing something special, serving on what was a technological marvel, the Navy's fastest and deepest diving nuclear submarine. Quote, they were going deeper and faster than anyone. I always considered my dad a hero and an adventurer, end quote.
Well, the fact that they were going deeper and faster was part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Frank DeStefano of Orange Park, Florida, said he owed his life to a 3-day assignment to Washington that took him away from the submarine during the fateful sea trials. The vessel, and another thing, this is also trials. So they're doing trials to see how far it can go and like if it'll withstand. Mm-hmm. So that's got a lot to do with it, I think, too. Because they basically died while they were learning.
Yeah.
The vessel, which was found a year later after it sunk, remains resting at a depth of 8,500 feet with the debris spread over a mile on the ocean floor. Bodies were never recovered, but
that's usually the case when there's like an implosion.
Most of the time, there's nothing to recover,
yeah.
Especially at that depth.
Mm.
And it's not going to be just like the Titan submarine where only the inside imploded. This imploded and it was the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I saw, they have pictures of it. It's like they're all in little tiny baby pieces. So,
practices and procedures.
After the investigation, the Navy embarked on an extensive review of practice and procedures in effect during the Thresher's overhaul. The reviewers determined that existing standards at the time were not followed throughout the refit to ensure safe operations of the submarine. Four issues were of particular concern. So, the design and construction. The submarine was designed and built to meet two sets of standards. Because of the submarine's nuclear power plant was the focus of the engineers, the standards used for the nuclear power plant were more stricter than those for the rest of the submarine. As a result of the emphasis placed on the nuclear-related aspects of the design, builders assigned less importance of the system and the saltwater systems, even though those two systems were crucial to the operation and safety of the vessel. So they kind of like were more focused on nuclear stuff than the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Brazing. Two standards of silver brazing pipe joints were used during the Thresher's construction overhaul. Brazing is a process that joins metal parts by heating them to a temperature sufficient to melt a filler material, which then flows into the space between the closely fitted parts by capillary action. Capillary action. Induction heating, which provides better joint integrity, was used for easily accessible joints. Where accessibility was restricted, handheld torches were used. Reviewers determined that handheld torches were used to heat many of the Thresher's crucial but less accessible pipe joints. Quality assurance. A newly accepted non-constructive testing technology for quality assurance was not implemented for the Thresher's overhaul. The Navy had experienced a series of failures with silver brazing while resulted in several near misses, indicating that the traditional quality assurance method, hydrostatic testing, was inadequate. Therefore, the Navy directed the shipyard to use an ultrasonic testing, a method newly accepted by the industry on the Thresher silver braze joints. However, the Navy failed to specify the extent of the testing required and did not confirm what the testing program was properly implemented. When ultrasonic testing proved to be burdensome and time-consuming, and when the pressures of the scheduled became significant, the shipyard discontinued its use in favor of the traditional methods. So that was on the shipyard.
Yeah.
The action was taken even though 20 of 145 joints passing hydrostatic testing failed to meet minimum bonding specifications when subject to ultrasonic testing.
My gosh.
And finally, procurement. So finally, specifications for government procurement were not strictly enforced. The Navy found that reducing valve components installed in the pressurized air system used to blow the main ballast tanks of the submarine did not meet design specifications. Because of the magnitude of pressure anticipated, the valve manufacturer had added a strainer feature upstream on the reducing valves to protect the sensitive valves from particle matter. When the Navy conducted tests on another Thresher-class vessel, it found that the pressure drops across the component at high flow rates caused entrained moisture to accumulate on the strainers and form enough ice to block the airflow. Venturi cooling, as the phenomenon is called, was thought to be the reason that the Thresher's attempt to blow its main ballast tank were ineffective. The lesson learned by the Navy are still applicable and should be applied to the Department of Emergency. So engineering, design, and construction must place equal weight on a nuclear and non-nuclear system. With the operation of either system can affect the safety and integrity of the overall system.
Did you say Department of Emergency?
I meant energy.
Okay.
Department of Energy. That's what I meant.
Thank you.
In selecting the standard of which a task is performed, the pressure of times and resources should not override safe and continued performance of the result. Selecting the easy standard to save time and money increased the probability of a failed weld.
I would say so.
Communication of a near-miss event by management of various departments or feedback helps to resolve weakness or flaws that in a future event could prove tragic. Procurement of equipment and components must be checked upon receipts as well as tested under operating conditions to verify its suitability. Valves or other parts that assembles with counterfeit bolts, which will fail when stressed. 25 years later, in 1988, Vice Admiral Bruce DeMars, the Navy Chief Submarine Officer, said, quote, "The loss of the Thresher initiated fundamental changes in the way we do business, changes in designs, constructions, inspections, safety checks, tests, and more. We have not forgotten the lesson learned. It's a much safer submarine for us today," end quote. So on April 3rd in 2003, 40 years after the nuclear submarine USS Thresher sank to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, New Hampshire's two senators supported legislation commemorating the event. Senator John E. Sununu, RNA, introduced a bill, and later that day, it unanimously passed Senate. Senator Judge Gregg and Senators Olympia Snow and Suzanne Collin of Maine were co-sponsors. All aboard, 16 officers, 96 enlisted men, and 21 civilians died in the tragedy. Quote, "The legislation honors their brave service and the service of all submariners who are on eternal patrol. The loss of the Thresher was an enormous tragedy for the U.S. submarine service, for the Navy, and the nation," end quote. That was a quote from John. quote, "The brave sailors and civilians aboard the USS Thresher made the ultimate sacrifice in support of our nation. This measure was introduced, recognizes the courage and bravery these men demonstrated in risking their lives in the development of the United States Navy submarine program, a program in which has proven to be invaluable to the American military," end quote. The Thresher was commissioned in 1961 and underwent weapons tests, including torpedoes. According to the press release, Sununu, Gregg, and Maine's two senators will introduce the legislation asking Army Secretary Thomas E. White to create a memorial at Arlington National Cemetery honoring those who lost their lives on the Thresher as well as all other nuclear subs that were lost at sea. I think they also have one for the Titanic boiler room people, right?
I would be surprised if they didn't.
This is 107th Congress. Whereas the USS Thresher was launched at Portsmouth Naval Shipyard on July 9th. And I'm just reading what it says in the bill. Yeah. That was Whereas the USS Thresher departed Portsmouth Naval Shipyard for her final voyage on April 29th, 1963, with a crew of 16 officers, 96 sailors, and 21 civilians. Whereas the mix of the crew reflects the unity of the military and the civilian personnel in the Naval Submarine Service in protection of the nation. Whereas approximately at 7:47 a.m., on April 10th, 1963, when in communication with the surface ship USS Skylark and approximately 300 miles off the coast of New England, the USS Thresher began her final descent. Whereas the USS Thresher was declared lost with all hands on deck April 10th, 1963, and whereas the crew of the USS Thresher demonstrated the, quote, last full measure of devotion, end quote, in service to the nation, and the devotion characterizes the sacrifices of all submariners, past and present. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Senate, the House of Representatives concurring, and the Congress remembers with profound sorrow the loss of the USS Thresher and her gallant crew of sailors and civilians on April 10th, 1963, and urges the Secretary of the Army to erect a memorial in Arlington National Cemetery to the crew of the USS Thresher and to all United States submariners who have lost their lives in the line of duty. The USS Thresher will forever remain on eternal patrol.
That's kind of eerie, that phrase, eternal patrol.
Yeah. Okay, so I have some updates about the USS Thresher for 2021.
Do share.
And so remarkable new information has emerged on the fate of the nuclear-powered attack submarine USS Thresher, also known by its hull number SSN-593, the lead submarine of its class. While the official explanation states that the submarine sunk soon after getting into trouble, quickly claiming the lives of 129 sailors and civilians, technicians on board, a newly unclassified report indicates that one submarine sent to search for it thought that at least some of the crew were still alive around 24 hours after the vessel was determined to have imploded.
Oh, shit.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. The newly released information is found among 600 pages of documents, which constitutes the most recent release of information from the previously classified investigation of the loss of the Thresher. While the Navy began releasing these documents last year on the order of a U.S. district court, these are the most recent. They seem to provide the first evidence that at least some of those searching for the Thresher believe that many that may have been crew members still alive on the submarine many hours after it was posted missing. Details are found in the official account of the commander of the USS Seawolf. Damn.
Also a good
That's
one.
Such a good name for a ship. The SSN-575, a unique vessel that was the second submarine to feature nuclear propulsion, including the Nautilus, the USS Nautilus, SSN-571. The Seawolf was one of the two submarines involved in the search of the Thresher. Previous Navy discloses about this incident have said that the submarine rescue ship USS Skylark detected high-energy, low-frequency noise characteristic of an implosion at approximately 9:18 that day. Exactly when this was determined is not immediately clear, especially since the Seawolf was still searching for signs of life more than 24 hours later. The Seawolf, as well as its Balo-class submarine USS Sea Owl, that's a good one too, SS 405 has been called to the area after voice communications with the Thresher were originally lost and the two submarines arrived over the following day. Neither were equipped to attempt any kind of rescue, but they were there to help search for the Thresher. So they were trying to figure out where they were. Newly released documents describe that while on its way to the area of interest, the Seawolf noted a possible life vest seen through its periscope as well as other debris in the water. However, this seems to be a false alarm that eventually only delayed the submarine's progress. So remember when they saw debris floating, they also think they might have found a life vest, which is probably possible. Around 10:30 a.m. on April 11th, the submarine finally began diving in the area where Thresher was last noted, listening for any signs of distress. Just over an hour later, according to the report, the SQS-4 sonar aboard the Seawolf discovered a stationary object about at 2,000 yards. The submarine closed in on the target only to lose it once Seawolf passed directly overhead, hiding the contact from the sonar. At 12:11 a.m., Seawolf heard via its RICOM receiver a signal from the distress beacon of a pinger, also known as the BQC. Although it couldn't yet be confirmed, that it was from the Thresher. This was clearly good news, since pingers, two of which were fitted on each submarine, needed to be manually activated to broadcast a signal. Using its UQC underwater telephone, the Seawolf requested the Thresher turn on its beacons on and off. A few minutes later, Seawolf reported, quote, "We hear what may be interrupted keying now," end quote. Suggesting the beacons were now being switched on and off deliberately. The Seawolf faced a problem, however, since the sonar activity of the destroyers that were also involved in the search were making it hard to decipher signals coming from what was now assumed to be the Thresher. Furthermore, the Seawolf needed to come near the surface each time its crew wanted to relay messages to other vessels in the search party or to the headquarters ashore. A second dive by the Seawolf involved another attempt to communicate with the Thresher. Quote, "If you hear my transmission key, your underwater telephone," end quote, was the message sent using the UQC. At 1:55 p.m., the Seawolf reported that it received the emergency beacon tone three times. 5 minutes later, another two tones were heard. This is all giving me flashbacks to when the Titan, and they were like, "We hear knocking."
Yeah.
"We hear knocking." As of this point, it seems the Seawolf thought that there was at least some people still alive on the Thresher, which would only have been possible had its hull not fully collapsed. But I disagree, because if it hit 8,400 feet, then I don't think anybody would be alive.
Yeah.
Because it's not equipped to be.
Yeah, because, like, even if the hull didn't fully collapse, like,
it's not built to sustain that amount. It was built to sustain 1,300 feet, not 84.
Yeah, and that is a lot of pressure on the outside.
Yeah, what is it? It's like 600 per pound.
Something. I don't remember. I just know it's a lot.
Okay. So,
what do you want to bet that it was like a Russian submarine or something that was like messing with them?
Probably, because it's around that time, and then I think a couple years later the USS Scorpion sunk, and they think it's because of a Russian submarine. That would be funny. The Russians really, like, at that time, they were really, like, fucking with everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. More evidence then came to the crew of the Seawolf at 2:15 p.m. when they reported hearing the main sonar from the Thresher. I think also they could still hear, like, sonar messages, but I don't think anybody would have been alive.
Yeah.
Like, that's not saying that the ship completely, like, just stopped.
Yeah.
Like, thriving, you know? If true, this would have indicated that there were not only survivors aboard the submarine, but it still had enough power reserves to transmit actively. At 2:24 p.m., the report notes that the sonar on the Thresher stopped transmitting, likely after the battery became exhausted. In total, the Seawolf had heard no fewer than 37 pings from the sonar of what it identified as a stricken submarine. At 2:33 p.m., the Seawolf reported, quote, "May hear a very weak voice," end quote, over the RICOM receiver, but the communications were too garbled to make sense of it. On the third dive, the sonar operations on the Seawolf said they began to hear the telltale banging of metal upon metal. This is giving me flashbacks. Suggesting that someone aboard the Thresher was trying to make contact. "Bang five times on hull" was the request made by the Seawolf, although the Seawolf did not get the five bangs requested and insisted heard groups of three. It did successfully make active sonar contact again, followed by more raps on the hull that was detected at 8:30 p.m. Once again, the Seawolf needed to surface to issue a report, and once again, it broke any contact with the Thresher. A fourth and final effort to find the missing submarine was then made early in the morning of April 12th, almost 2 days since the Thresher had first been posted missing. Trying the active sonars and calling the Thresher again on the UQC yielded no response. Quote, "No answers, no signals," end quote. In the words of the report of the Seawolf at 5:52 a.m., the dive was ended. Eventually, of course, the remains of the Thresher were located on the seafloor at the depth of 8,400 feet. But what happened that led up to the catastrophe is now far less certain. The original narrative had the submarine rapidly sank at the point of which communication was originally lost, but Seawolf, at least, was there still trying to make contact with it at what he thought was the Thresher many hours later. While the Navy was compelled to release reports or release the newer documents, it remains perplexing as to why aspects of the report, at least, were never disclosed before.
Because they were classified, that's why.
Ultimately, the Navy thought the Thresher underwent an implosion, which would have made any survivors of the initial accident a near impossibility. In the meantime, the issue of what happened has continued to be controversial. In his analysis, this guy, Amick, suggests it might have been a case of the Navy wanting to keep the prolonged demise of the Thresher a secret from the families of those who died. Whatever the reason, we are now slowly kind of like finding out more about the naval tragedy. It's the second deadliest submarine incident on record, but there are clearly many unknown reports to like hit it, you know, confirm it.
I would just say don't go into the North Atlantic Ocean in April. Mm. That's just bad news bears. That's what that is.
So an update. We have received correspondence from several readers. This is, and I've posted the link to the article that I found this on, so you guys can read it. But they have received several correspondences from several readers who wish to emphasize the fact that the claims of the USS Seawolf were discounted at the time of the original investigation into the loss of the Thresher. To clarify, the investigation was determined that the Thresher sank on the morning of April 10th and was destroyed near instantaneously by implosion. It is presumed, therefore, that all these documents that were released earlier this week relating to the part played by the Seawolf in the original scenario were also considered when the conclusion was originally reached. Unfortunately, the available account provides little in the way of detailed assessments of the sound reportedly heard by the Seawolf, but concludes that, quote, none of the signals which the Seawolf received equated with anything that could have been originated by human beings, end quote. Which is what they said about the Titan, but I still want to know why they heard five bangs at 30-minute intervals.
Yeah.
Who was doing that? Mm. Who? I don't think a fish.
Could have been.
I think somebody was fucking with them, too.
Could have been whales. You know, they've been fucking up people's yachts. They can just be doing whatever they want.
True. Meanwhile, on the message board of the Integration Undersea Surveillance System, Caesar Alumni Association, the IUSSCAA.
That's so long.
In response to Amick's video analysis of the newly unclassified Seawolf documents, Bruce Rule, a Navy acoustic and SOSUS expert who testified at the Thresher inquiry, stated, quote, this YouTube video is false. The Seawolf reported the presenter is reading from is correct, but the final report certified it was false readings. Seawolf was confused by the active sonar and noise created by the destroyers and the diesel submarine Sea Owl searching for Thresher on April 11th, 1963, the day after she was lost. She mistook all sounds from the searching ships as banging on the hull and sonar pings from the Thresher. It was a mistake, end quote. The war zone has reached out to the Navy for further clarification on the Seawolf's report, how it was originally assessed, and how the crew of that submarine came to believe that it was possible that the crew aboard the Thresher may still have been alive, but they have not responded. And then I have another update from 2023. So this is from an anniversary. They did like an anniversary, like 60th anniversary loss of the Thresher at like the place, like the memorial thing. Maurice F. Jacquet was a 26-year-old field support engine for the Rython Corp who boarded the USS Thresher SSN-593 in April 1963 to conduct tests of the submarine sonar equipment. He lived in Tucker Avenue in Middletown, Rhode Island, with his wife Carol and two children, a daughter named Hope, who was 2, and 9-month-old son Maurice Jr. Makes me think of the Madagascar lemur. Maurice. His father-in-law, William J. Boyle, was the chief of police in Cumberland, Rhode Island. On April 10th, 1963, Jacquet was one of 129 people, 16 officers, 96 enlisted sailors, and 17 civilian technicians who died when the Thresher, known to be the world's most technologically advanced nuclear-powered submarine of its day, sank while conducting deep-dive trials roughly 220 miles off the coast of Cape Cod, Massachusetts. To mark the 60th anniversary of that fateful day, the Naval Undersea Warfare Center, or NUWC. Why do they have to have, like, acronyms for everything?
I don't know.
Like,
just make names just shorter.
Yeah.
Just make them shorter names.
The Division Newport held a remembrance ceremony on April 10th under sunny skies and with a light breeze rolling in the...
Off Narragansett?
Bay Commanding Officer Cap. Captain Chad F. Hennings gave a brief statement followed by a moment of silence that lasted 129 seconds, 1 second for every life lost aboard the Thresher. Quote, thank you for participating in this solemn ceremony this morning, and thank you for what you do for Division Newport to keep our sailors and our country safe, end quote. Hennings told the assembled crowd at the conclusion of the ceremony. Standing behind Hennings as he spoke on April 10th were more than a dozen sailors, including Petty Officer Second Class Brody Costanini, if I butchered your name, I'm so sorry. An information systems technician in Division Newport's Undersea Water Electromagnetic Systems Department, who serves as a fleet liaison. While serving on board the USS Louisville in Hawaii from 2017 to 19, Costanini was a quality assurance inspector. Man, the USS Louisville, please. Oh, you know what? They could have named it the USS Louisville Slugger, and that would have been cool.
Missed the mark.
But they didn't. They didn't do that. Quote, the subsafe program is a very big on every single boat. There is a whole hierarchy where every division is required to have an X amount of people certified the quality in quality assurance. There are redundancies after redundancies put in place. It's awful what happened that 129 people lost, or 129 people died. A lot of lessons were paid in blood. That's like a eerie.
I mean, he's not wrong, though.
I think it's a woman.
Brody?
Is it? Oh, yeah, it is guy. Sorry. that saying, and then the USS Thresher is on eternal.
Yeah, eternal patrol.
That and a lot of lessons were paid in blood. That's a lot. Like, that's too eerie. It's
very,
like,
very metal.
A lot of lessons were paid in blood. It's because of this that we have all these plans in place. We don't want to repeat this. It's awful what happened, but because of it, we're a lot safer, end quote, Brody. The USS Thresher National Commemorative. What is it?
Commemorative.
You know what's so bad is I practiced this like 6 times. Was dedicated at Arlington National Cemetery on September 26, 2019. And there are other historical markers scattered throughout the country. In 2020, the Navy began the slow release of long classified reports into the Thresher after retired Captain James Bryant sued for disclosure of the Naval Court of Inquiry documents under the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, if you don't know. Among the roughly 3,600 pages are findings of facts and opinions, testimonies, photos, and exhibits. And that's all. That's all I have.
Well, interesting.
Oh, it's like a lot.
It was. But I always like these kind of things because a crime doesn't necessarily have to be murder, you know, for it to classify.
It's true crime, yeah.
Yeah, so technically this is still true crime because, you know, there's clearly people death. Didn't do their jobs properly and people died because of it. So if anything, that's, you know, manslaughter, I would think.
Yeah, but who do you charge? That's the thing. Like, who gets charged for it?
Well, definitely whoever was working at the shipyard on that particular sub. But probably the people in charge, I would imagine, who were basically rushing them to get them to finish quickly. Because I feel like if they weren't rushing them, they could have actually done things properly. And then also...
Well, the only thing that sucks is they did rush them because they were in a war. So I get why they rushed them.
Yeah.
Like, they had to go back out. Yeah. They had to go fight. You know what I'm saying? So I get why they were rushed.
Well, Cold War, there wasn't a whole lot of actual fighting.
It was World War II.
It was in the 60s. World War II ended in the 40s.
Cold War. I don't know. I know my grandpa was a Vietnam veteran and a Cold War veteran.
Yeah. Because the Cold War, there wasn't really, like, any actual fighting, and that's why it's called the Cold War.
It was a lot of standy, like,
puffing chests. Basically, with Russia for the most part, which, you know, that's been like that for a while.
The Berlin Wall fell.
Yes, in the 80s. But yeah, definitely manslaughter, I would say, at the very least. And then, you know, I'm glad that they actually, like they said, learned their lesson and changed things to make it safer for other people to go down. And I think that's kind of why the whole situation with the Titan was kind of sad, was because of the fact that, you know, the CEO of the company basically wanted to shirk any sort of oversight on the submarine.
He admits it too.
And, you know, because of that, now he's dead. And
well, that's what he gets.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks, but...
Also, it's a Bahama company. Like, you know... Yeah. Not saying that you can't have a company in the Bahamas, but if it's a bunch of billionaires and they're not even living in the Bahamas, so then
they were probably, you know, doing money laundering shit.
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. 100%.
Anyway, that was a very interesting case. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
We're going to wrap it up here. You can find us on social media. We are on Instagram at Shockingly Wicked Podcast. We're on Twitter at Wicked Podcast 1. We're on TikTok at Shockingly Wicked. Also on Facebook, Shockingly Wicked Podcast. I mean, I guess we're on YouTube, but we don't really post on YouTube. So, you know, you can find us there if you want. Doesn't matter. You can go check out our website at shockinglywicked.com, where you can find all episodes, all the goodness. You can find our merch store on there as well. Check it out. We have our anniversary sale for another couple weeks, and you get 20% off your order. Or you can subscribe here on Spotify for podcasters, or just Spotify, whatever it is, for $4.99 a month, and you get bonus episodes, unedited full video of interviews that we do with our guests on the podcast, and all episodes ad free. So I think that's a pretty snazzy deal. So we will see you next week. Bye.
Peace out. A-town.